The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike. Every day at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome some guests, usually in the studio, and that's what we're doing here today, socially distanced as we are. I'd like to welcome Scott and Rachel Plakin. Now, that name, you may recognize that name. Scott is actually one of the representatives for the Florida House, and you've been in for a while, Scott. So tell us a little bit about that experience. What's that like?
Well, first, thanks for having us on. I was elected for the first time in 2008 and served through 2012 and lost a race. And through a very long set of circumstances, I was able to run again in 2014 and have been serving since.
Mm-hmm.
This is my last, God willing, I win in November. It'll be my last term due to term limits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a great honor to do this. It's something that back in my 20s, we talked about doing, and it was able to come to fruition. And always thought in the middle of life, I'd want to do something to serve, give back. I've been blessed to have a number of businesses since college, and this is a way of serving and giving back. And we each in the Florida House represent about 180,000 people. So if you add 120 times about 180,000, it comes to the 21 million people in the state of Florida. My district is the western part of Seminole County. Most of everything west of 1792, except for part of Altamont.
Mm. Now, you've been in this area for many years, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Graduated from Stetson University in 1981 and started a business right out of college.
So were you born in Florida?
Well, I grew up in Rochester, New York, and our family would vacation for six weeks a year in Cocoa Beach. So I just learned to love Florida. And when it came time to choosing a college, there was no other state that I looked at, only Florida, and I wanted to be somewhere within reasonable driving distance of Cocoa Beach. So, never even looked at going anywhere else.
You know, so many of us, and in this day and age, Scott, I'm sure you get this all the time, but people are so involved in talking about politics, but there may well be said that it's never been a time where people know less about how our government is structured than today, because our schools for a long time have really not taught the way our representative government works in the same way that what happened when I grew up. So for you serving, what kind of an attitude do you see in the people with regards to when they find out you're a representative and serving in Tallahassee? What kind of feedback do you get from them?
Well, sadly, what you said, I've found to be true, that the knowledge in schools about our Constitution and our founding documents is pretty limited. We have passed legislation to increase that over the years, but there does not seem to be as much as used to a passion for learning about our government and what made us the most, the greatest, most prosperous country ever conceived. So we get all the time people, they may recognize my name, but they think I'm a congressman in Washington versus Tallahassee, or they're not many times that well educated. Now, some are, but I'm saying I think that our society would benefit a lot by getting back to our foundations and our roots, which made this country the great country that it is.
And it is that. It is exactly what you said. It's unique. It's prosperous. There's no accident by the fact that I believe that it is that way, because we've stood for so long for so many things that would be based on a Judeo-Christian ethic and a love for the Word of God, and especially throughout, again, most generations of people who are alive today. But, it is an unusual time right now that we're living in, and hostility is great right now for people who are serving us as you are. So I know that it's not an easy task, and I applaud you. I thank you. I commend you for serving. You really are serving. It's not always a glamorous kind of a lifestyle for a person who's in politics.
Well, you know, in talking about our founding documents, the thing that really separates us from any other society that I'm aware of is that in most societies, most human beings have lived under a king or a dictator, and their rights came from that king or that dictator,
mm-hmm.
and could be taken away by that king,
mm-hmm.
or that dictator. Whereas in our Declaration of Independence, it specifically enumerates that certain rights are given by God himself,
mm-hmm.
and that they're inherent. They cannot be taken away by
right.
any government or any man. There's even a part in the Declaration where if that government becomes so oppressive and starts taking these rights, it can be thrown off.
Right.
So it elevated our rights to where they are is God-breathed, and government is supposed to preserve those rights, not take them away.
Mm-hmm.
And we're living in a day today that there's real questions about what government's role should be in as it has to do with our rights.
You know, so many people say that, is this really that important? And from where I'm sitting, what I can see, it is. We better wake up and realize that there's a lot to lose. And I'm convinced, Scott, that people don't weigh in on just exactly what kind of impact would be if we weren't the free country that our Constitution laid out for us to be, and that up until now, we've been able to somehow maintain. I've heard America referred to many times as the great governmental experiment. And in some ways, it was that in the beginning, because like you said, most other world leaderships have been either monarchs or ruled from a military state or whatever. So it is definitely a bit of an experiment, and I don't think we've ever in our lifetime been as close to seeing some of our rights being taken away and lost. So it is time for us to stand up. It's time to get educated. I think it's time for us to become brushed up on the Constitution and not just buy everything that we're hearing on news media, because from where I'm sitting, again, being a member of the media, there's a lot of I don't trust about the media right now.
Well, you know, when I go to Tallahassee, we make laws. We're lawmakers. But I'm always mindful before we put forth any legislation that anytime you pass a law, you've actually taken somebody's rights away a tiny bit sometimes, okay? Because laws limit your right. Like mm-hmm. you don't have the right to drive 120 miles an hour on our roads. So I think that some of these states, you know, they pass laws like New York comes to mind. They have a full-time legislature. They make, I think, about $100,000 a year. Their legislature there, and they've just got more time to make a bunch of laws. And for example, Florida's budget is about $90 billion with slightly more population than New York. And their state budget is almost double ours.
Isn't that
because you got a bunch of politicians essentially controlling people's lives. So the more taxation you have, there's a scale between taxation and freedom. The more taxation, mm-hmm. the less freedom. Less taxation is more freedom. So we here in Florida have been one of the most responsible governments that I'm aware of. Our bond rating is AAA, stable in all three agencies, even was through the Great Recession. We actually got an upgrade through the Great Recession. And we have limited government here in the mm-hmm. state of Florida, which again means more freedom.
And no income tax, unlike New York, where I don't know how anybody can afford to live there personally, but I'm grateful that we still live in the Sunshine State. And some people would say, yeah, some of our income is paid in Florida sunshine, and that may be true in some sectors, but I am so grateful that you are representing us, and I'm grateful that we get to live in this beautiful state that is really, truly a free state. I'm grateful for the way our governor has been leading lately as well, and so there's much, much to be thankful for. Tell us a little bit about your own background, if you will. How did you come to know the Lord?
Well, I graduated from Stetson in 81 and started a company selling ads for college campuses. So we did we got contracts to do the University of Central Florida student and faculty directory, Rollins, Stetson, and over 2 or 3 years, 11 universities in Florida. I literally started it the Monday after Saturday graduation. I got $500 graduation money and took an $800 loan on a 1974 Ford Pinto, the green ones. Thankfully,
I had a 73 blue one.
Yeah, thankfully for both of us, neither of them
explode.
Blew up. Okay. So we went out and started selling advertising. And when I was in my mid-20s, I got a buyout offer from a larger company. And not too long after that, I met Susie at Calvary Assembly. Well, let me go back to where I met the Lord. So on July 22nd, 1982, I walked into Calvary Assembly to sell them an ad. And I'll take it one step farther. In 81, I had hired this woman to sell ads. And she sold one ad in 1981 to Calvary Assembly for $99 for their Rock House.
Oh, yes.
So the next year, I went, luck of the draw, so to speak, picked that account, and I went in to sell them an ad. I met with Mark Lawson, who you know quite well.
I do.
And we talked about the ad for about 30 seconds, and he told me about the gospel. And I had never heard a simple gospel message. Nobody ever approached me and told me, let me tell you about Jesus. I can remember one time, and the guy was just not very persuasive. And so I accepted Christ.
With Mark.
Right in his office.
That's amazing.
And then started attending Rock House. And in 1984, I met Susie, and we started dating. In fact, when I asked her on a date, because she was part of Rock House as well, I didn't want to mess it up. So I didn't say, will you go on a date with me? You know, coming from sales, I said, I'd like to take you out. Would Wednesday or Friday be better?
Mm-hmm.
She said Friday, like in 2 weeks or something. So, and then we got married in July of 85, went on to raise six children who are now all grown. And 2 years ago, in 2014, she started having memory issues.
Hmm.
So we did a lot of testing, and it turns out at age 53 was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
So young for that.
Yeah. And we lost her in 2018 after struggle all those years. So I guess people are listening to this in their 20s and 30s. You just never think when you're married, like,
no,
you think you're going to grow old together. Okay.
Yeah.
But God had, took our lives in different directions. And so after she passed away, I got with, with my four of the six kids one night just talking. And I said, guys, I loved your mom, but I loved being married and having a companion. Said, I'm going to get married again. So they went in the kitchen, came back and said, yeah, and they gave me the blessing. So I could have chosen to just be in despair and lonely and all that. But instead I decided to put one foot in front of the next. And, Rachel Saunders was my real estate agent for about 4 months into 2018, had sold my business to Care for Susie, my third publishing company since college. And, at the beginning of 18, thinking she was going to live a lot longer. And, after Susie passed away with my kids' blessing, I asked Rachel on a date, and she is here in the studio with us today. We got married, last year. In May. We've been married almost a year and a half now.
Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
As I like to say, I've hit the lottery again.
Yes. The Bible talks about he that finds a wife finds a good thing. So that's great.
And Rachel, I will say, is, we got married in sort of in the middle of life. And she's, we talk about me being a representative, but she's also very accomplished, graduated from Earl Roberts University, and then went on to work for Jeb Bush for about a year, and then moved to Nashville and started a house flipping business at about 23 years old, I think, and also pursued a Christian singing career simultaneously with that, and did well at that, and then moved to Florida and is now successful in commercial real estate. And she's also involved in politics. 2 years in 2018, the Speaker of the House appointed her to the Florida Commission on the Status of Women. By the way, I'm sorry, I'm bragging about my wife. I'm almost done. 2018, she got appointed. It was one of 22 women that are appointed by the Speaker, the Senate President, the Attorney General, and the Governor. And then last year, Governor DeSantis appointed her to the Suffrage Commission, which was formed. We formed it under a law we passed to celebrate the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote, the 19th Amendment. So she's one of 18 women on that. It's chaired by the Lieutenant Governor. She's one of only three women in the state that are on both of those panels. So I'm done.
Well, that's great. Rachel, you're a busy person as well.
Absolutely. But we love it. We love our life. And but we go about 80 miles an hour every day.
That's amazing, isn't it? I want to hear more from your background in a moment when we get back. My guest today is Scott and also Rachel Plakin. And Scott is one of the representatives in Tallahassee representing us on the Florida House. So we'll be back with them in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Don't you dare go away. Back again here on Afternoons with Mike. In the studio with me, Scott Plakin and his wife, Rachel. And Rachel, we learned right at the last, you've got a background in real estate and you're involved, like your husband, with politics and some really exciting things there. But you're also a singer. Before we hear any of that, let's hear about how you came to know our Lord.
I actually grew up in the church. Both of my parents were Christians and went to church three times a week, Sunday night and Wednesday night. And when I was 5 years old, I committed my life to the Lord. When I was a teenager, you know, was kind of a typical teen, led a little bit astray by some peer pressure and stuff like that, but always had a heart for God, went to Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I grew up in the panhandle of Florida in a small town. And, when I was at ORU, I really came to have a relationship with the Lord, like I've never known. And it really learned about God like I'd never known before.
What was that place like when you were there? Because of the presence, obviously, of Oral Roberts, Richard Roberts, always in the news and
really wonderful place. You know, Christianity, but also just godliness was integrated in every part of everything that we did. And you would see people praying in the cafeteria. We prayed in the classroom. Mm-hmm. We prayed everywhere in the parking lot. I remember the first week that I came to campus, just hearing a group of students outside, maybe 100 or 200, just praying and just crying out before the Lord in the parking lot. And so it was a really wonderful time in the late 90s, especially at Oral Roberts.
Now, were you part of their music program there?
I was not. Actually, when I first came to Oral Roberts University, I was looking for a niche. Someone invited me to our College Republicans group. And so that's kind of how I first became involved in government and politics, was at Oral Roberts University. I became the president of the College Republicans. Mm. And then later on worked different campaigns around. And so Scott and I have a lot in common.
Now, you're singing. How did that happen? Was that something you did in church growing up?
I did. I grew up singing in the church and then different places around festivals and that kind of thing.
Who would have been the person that you looked up to as a singer back then?
Back then, definitely Amy Grant.
Amy Grant was everywhere. Yeah, Amy Grant. I think everybody your age would have been.
I still enjoy listening to Amy Grant.
Yeah, all of the music like El Shaddai and all of that. And
definitely.
There was a time I remember going to some churches. My wife and I also traveled with music, and we'd go to churches, and I would be playing and speaking often. And almost every time, there's one year, almost every time we went someplace, there would be some young lady that would get up before we would sing, and she would do an Amy Grant song. I mean, that happened time And time again, she had quite an impact, didn't she?
She sure did.
Yeah,
that's great.
Now, tell us a little bit about your Nashville music experience. I think every musician has a dream that one day they're going to move to Nashville.
That's right.
They're going to be discovered somehow. They're going to be out down on Music Row playing in some place. Did any of that shake out for you like that?
It did, yeah. When I went up to Nashville, I was 23 years old. And a short while after I was there to pursue a Christian music career, I ended up in real estate. I ended up flipping houses. I had met other investors and mentors who helped me along the way and developed a thriving business doing that, as well as recording at night. And so really had both, had the best of both worlds, and I was able to pay the bills with the real estate.
Well, they're starving artists being what they are.
Not as much with the music, but I used it as a, you know, kind of a mission. And I said, Lord, you know, if you'll bless me, help me with this real estate, then, you know, I'll serve as much as I can, you know, with the music and in other areas.
So by the time you got to Nashville, there's probably already happening with regards to the big change and less studio involvement, more home studio type of thing. Was that already happening then?
It was just starting to happen, you know, the computers developed and people had programs like GarageBand and different things. And it just, it became much easier when I was there. And a couple of years into it, social media became a thing. And so really, you didn't really have to have a label to push you. You could promote yourself on social media, develop a loyal fan base.
Like on MySpace?
On MySpace. I did the MySpace of the Facebook. So I was really blessed in that regard. I was able, as an independent artist, to travel up and down the East Coast, all over Asia. I went to 3 countries in Asia in 2013 and had a full schedule in 2013.
Did you write your own songs or did you use
other
people? Okay.
The last album that I did was called Resilient by Love, and I wrote every song on there.
Oh,
I had some wonderful co-writers, too, in Nashville that helped me out.
So when you look back on that, is that like a fun thing? Is it something that you really cherish and relish the memories of that? Are you still involved in it?
I am. Not as much anymore. I was a wonderful time. And now, you know, that I live in Central Florida, wanted to develop more roots in one place. You know, I didn't want to be on the road every day. There's something to be said about going home every night and being able to be in your bed. And so it's just wonderful now that I have a family to be able to stay in one place and then volunteer in our local community. Mm-hmm. And I also enjoy singing out. I do patriotic songs sometimes. And then also I'll sing at our church or I was sitting at a memory care center sometimes on the holidays.
So special. Yeah.
Definitely.
That's one of the things that that attracted me to Rachel is since she moved down here every year, her and her friend Craig would go to this memory disorder clinic to minister to the people there. And as I shared that Susie died from the effects of Alzheimer's,
yes.
So that really struck a chord with me when we met. And could I throw in 2 fun facts about Rachel?
Oh, absolutely.
So she said she grew up singing. I think when she was 12, she toured Israel as the warm-up act for Pat Boone.
Oh, my goodness.
For the younger listeners, that's Pat Boone. He sang in the 50s, 60s, and still does, if you don't know who Pat Boone is. But most people in their 30s or up know Pat Boone. And the second thing is she was the first American teenager to perform in the Great Hall of China. Is that right?
That's right.
Oh, my word. Well, congratulations on
Thank
those two
you.
Feats. How was it touring with Pat Boone back in that time?
It was great. I didn't really know who he was either at that time, but he was a great man. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
You played golf with him later on, too.
I did. Yeah, later, years later, we played golf together in Beverly Hills, of all places.
I had a chance to, one of the stories that I recently shared on here was about his daughter, Debbie. It's been an afternoon. We recorded her. It was back when I was doing television things. And boy, she was so gracious to me. I was the engineer for a videotaping, and we did a half an hour solid straight through interview, only for me and my horror to realize that I had a switch thrown wrong. and the audio was completely lost.
Oh, no.
It was distorted out the window, and I had to be the bearer of bad news to say I goofed up. And she was so gracious, without any hesitation, she said, let's do it again.
Oh, did you look at her and say, Debbie, you lot at my life?
No, I didn't.
Hey, is that switch the right way today?
Or? Oh, my goodness. We got it right that time.
Okay,
and
good.
Yeah, it went well.
Want to share about the meaning of that story to us, Rachel? We had that song.
Oh, you're going back to You Light Up My Life.
We did. We danced to You Light Up My Life. That was our song.
How about that?
That was our first dance.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, I tell you what, that's a story.
She tried to teach me. We took a couple dance classes to do this.
Oh, we did. We had it all planned out.
What kind of dancing was that?
We were going to, blow everybody's mind with our dance skills. And
A
couple days before the wedding, I said, just forget all that. Let's just sway.
She had a very great, in her gracious way, had a very gracious way of saying, you are terrible at this.
Okay. So you're a better legislator than you are a dancer. We're getting that one right now.
I think that's a fair statement.
Tell us a little bit, Scott, switch over back to you for a moment on what you learned and what you're involved with regards to this whole issue of Alzheimer's, because it is something that is becoming more impacting on American way of life. More and more people are talking about it, and if not Alzheimer's, dementia, there's just a lot to know about that, and a lot to be, I think, to learn about it.
Well, as I shared, Susie was diagnosed in 2014,
mm-hmm.
and we were absolutely shocked. How could this happen? Mother of six at 53 years old to have Alzheimer's. And I'd always thought Alzheimer's was just that disease. I didn't know anything about it, really, that you forget stuff and eventually you probably pass away. But our journey taught us it was so much more. We had, and Susie, for those that know her, was the sweetest person. In fact, I shared her celebration of life. She went to be with the Lord with, I don't think, a single person not liking Susie.
Mm.
She's that kind of person. And, but, there was extreme agitation called sundown syndrome,
mm-hmm.
where she got, almost a psychotic, over a period of years. She had two different kinds of seizures, grand mal seizures and myoclonic shorter ones in September of 2000, going back in July 1st of 2016, a couple years after diagnosis, we were involved in a terrible car accident. And, she went from stage 2 out of 7 to stage 5 in one moment and never came back.
Mm.
So that accelerated it by quite a bit. And then in September of that year, she had a grand mal seizure. I've never saw one, but I heard a very disturbing noise coming from our hallway with tile and found her in a pool of blood for head. We rushed her to the ambulance. And so even beyond the Alzheimer's, that, and then she later on had other grand mal and myoclonic seizures. We tried to medicate it, but it was very difficult. And in the last year or two, I had to take care of all of her personal needs,
mm-hmm.
things that husbands and wives don't really think about when you're younger, when you make a wedding vow.
Mm-hmm.
Death us do part.
Yeah.
So, so with what I learned about Alzheimer's and related dementias, I thought that I have an opportunity as a legislator to represent, people listen to what you say a little bit more if you're in that job. So I decided to honor her legacy by trying to help as many people as I could. And even when she was still with us, I started passing legislation myself, Republican, and Representative Will Height from Palm Beach County, a Democrat, have every year put forth and passed a bill to help people with Alzheimer's, some policy, some funding. And we, every time we pass a bill in the closing on the House floor, we say, the color of Alzheimer's is purple. So one of us or the other says, it's when red and blue come together, Republicans and Democrats,
it makes purple.
Yep. The color of Alzheimer's awareness. So, consistent with Romans 8:28, we know God can take something bad and turn it into good. We got funding for a memory disorder clinic in, at Advent Health in Winter Park. This year, we passed a law to create a state position for a dementia director that will have a very powerful position across state agencies. And we've done numerous other pieces of legislation by working together. There's 580,000 people in this state that suffer, and then the family caregivers, because the caregiving is extensive. It's, it affects way more than a million people directly. So, and I've been able to speak at the Walked Out and Alzheimer's, I think 5 years in a row, I've been the keynote speaker with a couple thousand people downtown Orlando. I speak to caregivers group. In 2018, I was the keynote speaker at their national convention, the Alzheimer's Association in New Orleans. So, and then, but I will tell you this, Rachel has been from the beginning with me at every step of the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what,
because, you know, she's been great at acknowledging, you know, that I was married for 33 years.
Yeah.
And so supportive. So when Susie passed away, at her celebration of life, there was about 600 people there. The Alzheimer's Association announced the creation, and I allowed them to do this, of the Suzanne Plakin Leadership Award for Alzheimer's. Mm. And she was the first recipient posthumously. And then in 2019, Rachel and I met with Governor DeSantis in his office for about 20 minutes. And, you know, he knew Susie a little bit, but we, you know, I got to reshare our story with Rachel right there by my side and chiming in and supportive. And informed him he was the next recipient of the Suzanne Plakin Award, and he actually, it was a beautiful award. He normally the staffers take that, and you don't even know where it goes. Well, it's in his office. One of the things in his office, and and Rachel's family also has been profoundly affected. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
by Alzheimer's.
Yes, my own family has suffered from Alzheimer's, so. It's, you know, it's just wonderful to see Scott make such a difference with all of this. And I love seeing his passion for this great cause.
And it really takes a strong woman like Rachel to stand there. I mean, let's face it, I'm married to her now, but the legacy of Susie is changing mm-hmm. the state in a way that none of us would ever imagine. And she walks in support and beside me in that. And that just takes a really strong woman to do that.
I'm almost done with a book that was sent to me by Jim Henry, longtime pastor at First Baptist, and he went through this with his lovely wife, and they spent all these years together, and it is really an amazing book to read and to get on the inside of this. The impact is great, and I think that, again, people that are in your position can really help other people with both laws and awareness and these kinds of awards that you've given to Governor DeSantis. That's amazing, and so grateful that we have people who are telling the story, because, again, there seems to be an uptick in the impact of this disease and related diseases on our culture today.
Right, and I should mention, about a month ago, Rachel and I went to Tallahassee and presented the next winner of that award is Richard Prudhomme, the Secretary of the Department of Elder Affairs. When he met with me in 2018, 3 days after he was appointed by the governor of that position, he says, "I want to make Alzheimer's the top priority of my agency, and I want to use your story to do that." So Susie's life has directly impacted the governor and the legislature, because, see, she was there in the gallery. So it was like, it's one of our own, mm-hmm. you know, it's a small community of legislators. So, the world is being changed, even now. And, I'd like to add this, that, being a widower is a very strange world, as you can probably imagine. But I did find out, I remember thinking, who's ever going to want me to marry, you know, at almost 60 years old at the time. But I'll give hope to some, if you're a widower out there listening to this, and especially if you had a successful marriage, there are a lot of women that are looking for a good and faithful man.
That's
as
true.
Proven by a long-term marriage.
That's true. A really good and faithful man. It's kind of hard to come by these days. So
I would not doubt that one bit, because it
and
is
single and single. There's a lot of good and faithful married, you know, but to find somebody who's newly single is rare.
And I want to also make mention a resource that I've looked at throughout my journey, it's called the Widower Support Network. It's a Facebook group with over 1,000 men around the world. It's a private Facebook group. A friend of mine, Herb Knoll, who I've known way before I was a widower, he's a widower himself, started it about 3 years ago. And widowers share their stories, the grief they experience when their spouse died. It's especially interesting to see the stories when they find out that somebody actually said yes on a date when they hadn't been on a date with anybody but their late spouse for 30 or 40 years.
Oh, I know. I remember when you asked me out, you said, I don't know how to do this. I haven't asked anybody else since 1982 or something.
Last time I asked anybody on a date before Susie was 1982.
Yeah.
And then after we're dating about a month, one of my sons says, well, Dad, have you asked her to be your girlfriend yet? I said, well, is that like, you have to ask that? Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, she is, but no, that's a form. No, you have to say, will you be my girlfriend? I guess that makes you exclusive or something.
You gotta make it official.
But I also want to share, that, you know, I'm older than Rachel. So after Susie passed away, I had some health problems, and I had to show up at her house in the second month of dating and let her know that I have prostate cancer.
Mm.
And her response was so warm and wonderful. And then a week or so after that, I'm at her house, and I was downstairs. She was upstairs. I was waiting to go somewhere. I'm looking at a poster on her wall, and I can't read any of the words. I said, Rachel, can you come downstairs? I think I'm having a stroke. She took me to the local ER. They gave me the stroke medicine. Then they took me by ambulance downtown. I was there for 4 days. And it turns out it wasn't a stroke. It's a very rare thing.
It's
like an inflammation of the
brain. Like a temporary inflammation of the brain, but it was temporary.
It's not even really dangerous. And, but all the doctors for 3 days thought it was. So she this is in the first couple months of dating, she could have kicked the old guy to the curb, you know, and, her response to that was just so warm and loving and kind
Now I make you take your vitamins every day.
She says this to a lot of friends. How do you compare me? Like,
he likes when I say this for some reason. I don't know why. When we were dating, and I kept take him to the ER and stuff. I said, you're like an old dog because you're loyal and kind, but I have to take you to the vet all the time. And he would just laugh.
I'm already trained.
Scott and Rachel Plakin, my guests today in the studio. And we'll be back with one final segment with them coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Here we are in the studio. I've got Scott Plakin, his wife, Rachel. And we're so honored to have Scott here, Scott and Rachel both. Scott is a representative for the state of Florida. He is serving us in Tallahassee. And, you know, this is the time where we're needing people who are willing to stand up for our country, willing to stand up for the values that made this country great. I was talking with Dave Zanotti from the Public Square. He was on my show, and one time I asked him this question, and he said, what's it going to take to see some things turn around? And his voice was, we need people to do exactly what you're doing. We need people to represent the state of Florida. America is a representative form of government. We need people to stand up, especially stand up for the values that our Constitution laid out for this country. We need people to get involved. How do you feel about that? Do you agree with that?
Well, you're absolutely right. That's how our country began, is people being active and standing for the right for us to be free from the King of England. And of course, not everybody is a place where they can run for office. But I think people underestimate the influence that they can have by getting involved in campaigns, whether it be volunteering or donating, making phone calls. We're knocking on doors right now with a bunch of people. We go out on Saturday mornings and also during the week. So I people probably don't realize how much people running for office appreciate the people that are willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And it seems to have become, in talking to other campaigns of both parties, it's become less, there's less, it seems to be less zeal to volunteer and even donate than just years ago. So it comes back to what we were talking about earlier about getting engaged and being knowledgeable about government. But people are surprised to find out that, you know, you can go just make a big impact on some of these campaigns. And
it's so true. And one of the big things you can do is become an informed voter. You know, most of the supervisor of elections offices sends out a sample ballot before voting mm-hmm. election day.
Absolutely.
And you can look at that, call your friends and neighbors, and make sure you're voting for the people who share your values.
You know, I think you're exactly right, Rachel. This is something that my wife and I have used for years. We get that, and I make a copy of it, now they're sending one to both of us, actually. So we sit down and mark up our ballot before we actually go in to vote, and we've got it right there. It does take some prep work, because so often
exactly.
a lot of the
mm-hmm.
things that you are going to be voting on or facing when you're in the poll is something that you may not know that much about without research. So iVoter.com is a big resource. That's one. I know my good friend John Stimberger has a great political arm through the Florida Family Policy Council,
it's
and
true.
They offer some things as well.
And you could also call Scott.
Scott
reach
Plakin.
Out to your
there
representative.
You go. Yeah.
We have people call us and say, who do I vote for?
Yeah,
you know,
I'll,
who
I'll,
shares this and that principle and value?
Yeah, my phone number is 407-221-8452. That's my cell phone. Yes,
that's
I'm
his actual
on the air.
Only cell phone number.
It's my cell phone, 407-221-8452. I actually give my cell phone out to any constituent I come in contact with. We actually leave it at their doors when we knock on the door.
Hmm.
So it gives me a fairly steady stream of phone calls of hearing from constituents and keeping in touch with them
mm-hmm.
Throughout the day. And, you know, I can't always take the call, but I always call back within 24 hours.
And so this kind of resource is really helpful when you have a way to find out, for example, judges. And how can people, what would your suggestions be for people using, let's say, Google, if they want to find out, what's the best way to find out information about judges?
Well, that's a great question. And because they have certain judicial canons where they can't talk about certain parts of what they do. But I've found it is hard, but I found the best way is to go to their websites and Google them. For believers, for example, if they were part of a volunteer for a crisis pregnancy center, that gives you a data point that's probably very important to most believers. Certain volunteer work, they can list these kind of things on their website. So they can't tell you, you know, how they're going to vote on anything. So it's a little bit tricky to pick one, but you can divine their values to some extent
mm-hmm.
in many cases by looking at what they've done with their life.
So and isn't it true that with things being as separated right now, it's so great to hear you tell that story earlier about crossing over the aisle and working on that one law, that one bit of a work that you were doing with Alzheimer's with a person on the other side of the aisle. Who commends or who appoints a judge is also a bit telling on the platform that judge at least has warmed himself up enough to the person who's appointing him that can be a little bit of intel as well.
That's true. That's a good point.
So this is something that's one way. Again, these websites are iVoter.com, also Florida Family Policy Council. You can Google that, look up resource guides for voting guides, and get involved in this process. Now, what you mentioned this earlier, Rachel, turning to you, speaking of voting and women voting, this is we've come over that the threshold of the big anniversary for suffrage. You're involved, as Scott was telling us earlier, on these two committees.
That's
what
right.
kind of scene are you seeing in Florida today with regards to women being active in politics?
Well, I'm seeing, you know, women from both sides of the aisle. I'm honored to serve on the Florida Commission on the Status of Women and also the Florida Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission, where I've been I'm afforded the opportunity to travel the state, and I do a lot of presentations on Zoom for talking about the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which essentially gave women the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I wanted to talk about was that a lot of people don't realize that there was a lot of Christian women who fought for women to have a voice and the right to vote. And we normally think about it as being progressive women, but no, but there were many Christian women. Mary McLeod Bethune, she wanted to be a missionary. She moved to Florida and started a school for girls and fought for the right to vote. Also, Susan B. Anthony mm-hmm. was a big worker in the temperance movement and abolition of slavery movement. And so you had a lot of these God-fearing women come out of the movement from that were fighting for the abolition of slavery, fighting for temperance, for alcohol to be abolished, that wanted the right to vote. They wanted to have their own voice. There are also courageous Methodist women, such as Anna Howard Shaw, Frances Willard. So you had so many women that that a lot of people are not aware of. I like to call it the America's Forgotten History.
And I think America often has forgotten history.
You're right.
You know, it's not, I mentioned earlier, it's not being taught the same way it was. And some would say it's actually being revised a lot in ways that are not helpful to our maintenance of the original vision and direction for the founding fathers that they've given us. So we're going to have to fight for our country, I believe, more so than ever before. Going forward, we're going to have to take advantage. There are Hillsdale College that offers a free course that you can take on understanding the Constitution. And it's absolutely college level at no cost. It's a free course. So there are these opportunities for people to take advantage of to say, hey, if we don't get this, our grandchildren are, you know, for younger parents, our children may be growing up in a different country than what I grew up in. And I think it's going to have to take mm-hmm. involvement to avoid a loss of freedoms for our country. Well, I tell you what, these are times when you look back, Scott, over your shoulder over this past year, this certainly has to be the most unusual of all years for you serving with the coronavirus. What are you seeing happen statewide with regard to COVID-19 and regulations on churches?
Well, in the early stages in particular, there was a number of mayors and even governors around the country that use the opportunity, or I should say abuse the opportunity, to, under the guise of protecting people, to essentially banning church groups from meeting. And I cannot think of a more clear violation of the First Amendment of our Constitution than that. So that took a little while for them to get slapped back by the courts.
That's true. And fortunately, Governor DeSantis, though, said that going to church was essential.
Yes.
Yeah, in his first executive order, he explicitly put those words in because you had, in some municipalities, even around Florida, they were going overly oppressive. And most of the churches, they were taking great precautions because, I mean, let's face it, as a believer, you know, you want to do what you can to keep your a pastor, to keep your people safe.
Mm-hmm.
So, but some of these mayors around the country, it was just unbelievable. They were allowing these big rallies to go around and people marching by the thousands, and you can't have more than 10 people in a church at the same time.
Right.
So the process has generally worked with that. But in terms of our governor's handling of this, I think he's done remarkably well. I don't think he's gotten credit for it because him and a good friend of mine, Secretary Halsey Bashirs, who heads the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, they have a very difficult job in preserving our civil liberties on one hand to mm-hmm. the greatest extent we can, and on the other hand, keeping the population safe and keep the number of deaths in particular down. So I've had numerous conversations with Secretary Bashirs, and I think that they've taken a very judicious approach in going about this. So we're just entering the final phase of this, and our deaths are down, and the numbers are looking remarkably well. And we are one of the most free states right now that I'm aware of.
I agree. What do you see this most recent thing last Friday where we're going into phase three? What changes do you anticipate?
Well, I think that the greatest thing is that these business owners, say restaurants, for example, can now, you know, make their living again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's really tragic about this is so many families that have started businesses, some even a generation or two ago, that have essentially lost those. So the entrepreneurial spirit is going to be unleashed here, and I think the economy is going to come screaming backwards. Our unemployment down in Florida is down to 7.4% now.
Oh, keep it coming. We need it going down. What's your website that people can reach you?
It's www.scottplakin.com, or I'm on Facebook at /Facebook/ScottPlakin or /Rep Scott Plakin.
And that's Plakin, P-L-A-K-O-N, ScottPlakin.com. That's a great, simple website for you to have right there. Scott and Rachel, thank you so much for being with me here today.
Thank you.
Thanks
it was a
for
great
having
honor.
Us.
It's great to have you here, and our best with you on your upcoming election this year. I know you're in a battle, as all of the people who are going for it are. And we just ask that the Lord would continue to guide both of you in your lives. Thank you for representing him so well in the ways that you do. And we appreciate you coming by. And friends, thank you for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.